Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Music in the South Bay, on January 23rd, 2017. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. It's also a great place to listen to live music. I'm your host, Joe Terry. The South Bay Show is brought to you by Direct Sellers. Have you ever wished that you could take a trip around the world to the best vineyards and wineries, you know, small batch wineries that perhaps aren't as well known but have a local reputation to make excellent wine? Well, now's your chance. And you don't even have to leave your home. Direct Sellers, that's CELLARS, Direct Sellers, is a company that has perfected a model that is really innovative. You pay one low fee per month, and they ship to you wines from all over the world, from Australia and New Zealand and, of course, South America, Uruguay and Brazil, and, of course, the old world. Pardon me, the old world, Italy, France, Germany, Austria. And these wines that you receive every month have a story. And so you receive a little card that tells the story of the wine, what you might find on the palate, how to interpret and appreciate the wine. And every month you get a new surprise in the mail. That's Direct Sellers. It's an innovative concept, recently ranked number 4 in the top 10 online wine clubs in America. Please check it out at joeterrywine.com. That's Joe, J-O-E, T is in terrific, E-R-R-Y, wine.com, joeterrywine.com. Of course, this is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to celebrate live music here in the South Bay. And of course, with us today is our very special guest, Barry Brisk, conductor of the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra. Barry first conducted in public at the age of 14 when he performed selections from South Pacific at his graduation from Webster Junior High School in West Los Angeles. As a student, he also conducted the orchestras at University High School, Mount St. Mary's College, and the University of Music, formerly Academy of Music, in Vienna, Austria, where he studied with the prominent conductor teacher Hans Swarovski. Professionally, Brisk has conducted many orchestras in Southern California as well as in Mexico and Austria. Maestro Brisk has been music director of the Beach City Symphony since 1994 and is particularly proud of having expanded the orchestra's repertoire. He has conducted works by more than 80 composers, more than a dozen of whom are living, and we hope they're still living. Today, we're talking about Le Grand Geste, Mozart, Beethoven, and Sibelius. Barry, welcome to the program. Oops, sorry, that's me. Barry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Joe. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
I had you on mute there, I think.
Sorry, that's too bad. Okay. Yes.
I don't know. Well, Barry, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. I love doing these shows on a quarterly basis to highlight the Beach City Symphony Orchestra. And I always want to start, Barry, first with telling people exactly what is the Beach City's Symphony Orchestra.
Right. In a nutshell, it's what we call a community orchestra. That's as opposed to a professional orchestra. In a professional orchestra, everybody is professional and everybody gets paid. In a community orchestra, you have people who do something else for a living. Given the South Bay, we have lots of scientific people and engineers and whatnot. And we used to have a doctor and, you know, various school teachers, various professions. And they do this in their spare time, so to speak, as an avocation. I mean, they love their music, so they love coming to rehearsals and playing the great music we do. And, of course, when you've played an instrument for years, you love just playing that instrument, getting the violin under your chin or putting the clarinet in your mouth and whatnot. There's a physical thing about that. And then, of course, there's the social aspect. You go to rehearsals, you've been with some of these people for 20 years or more, and so there's all kinds of aspects to a community orchestra that are different from a professional orchestra. On the other hand, because we're, quote, to use another expression, an amateur orchestra, there are many pieces in the repertoire that the Los Angeles Philharmonic can play that we can't play. It's just too difficult for a group of even talented amateurs. So we have a slightly different repertoire and slightly more restricted. But then we're providing an opportunity for local people to play in an orchestra. That's the first thing a community orchestra is about. Giving concerts for an audience is the second thing. But the first thing is to give these talented and trained people an opportunity to exercise their skills.
Yes.
Musicians are very goal-oriented because, you know, you practice your piano, you learn a piece to play at a recital when you're 8 years old. Once you start coming together as an orchestra, you don't just play. You have a goal. You're preparing a concert for, you know, 8 weeks down the road or something. So that's what we do. A professional orchestra like the Pasadena Symphony, Long Beach, the L.A. Philharmonic, they have like three rehearsals within a few days before the concert, and then they do the concert. We rehearse once a week on Wednesday evenings for 6 to 8 weeks. It all depends on how the scheduling goes, and then we do our concert. So it's a whole different way of thinking about orchestras.
You know, I when I think of the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra, which you rehearse at the Redondo Union High School, is that correct?
That's correct. Their band room, yes.
Right. And then the performances are at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College.
That's correct. So we spend, let's say, 6 weeks Wednesday evenings rehearsing in the high school. And then the week of the concert, like this week, we have two rehearsals in the auditorium, Wednesday night, Thursday night, and then the concert is Friday night.
I find that one of the things that a community orchestra such as the Beach City Symphony does is that it is immediately accessible to families. The concerts are free, which opens up the door to many, many more local families to expose their children to fine music. Please, can you comment on that?
Yes. No, you're quite right about that. My wife tends to sit in the back, and she's always telling me there are families there with little kids, and maybe they only last to the intermission before they either get antsy or fall asleep and depart. But, with a free admission, we have all kinds of people there, including many college students from El Camino College, which is where the performances take place. I think some of them are music students, or they're taking a music appreciation class, and they perhaps have to go there as an assignment, but then they have to write it up or something. But it's free for them, so there's, you know, so it's all built in. Yes.
So, you know, and I know for a fact that the L.A. Philharmonic does a tremendous amount of outreach and training and exposing young people to the best that music has to offer. But a community orchestra can do, there's a little bit closer to the people than the LA Phil. And it's a little bit more familiar and accessible. And then the repertoire, I understand that the repertoire is different, but I also understand that you do a little bit different things, some things that LA Phil doesn't do, not because it's more difficult, but it's just not a part of the regular repertoire. We get some very interesting programs from the Beach City Symphony. Can you comment on
some of that?
Right.
One of the things I've always done is present music by what I call local composers, mainly from Southern California. And these are people who are currently alive. And like this upcoming May, we're doing a piece by Charles Fernandez. Last year, we did a piece by Jim Stanley. And there it goes, you know, I could give you a list of people from the past 22 years that we've done, myself included. And so this is something you wouldn't get from the professional orchestras. If they do new things, the LA Philharmonic does new things all the time, but they're people with bigger reputations, John Adams or Paul Philip Glass or people of that nature, whereas we don't present them. First of all, the music is probably too difficult for us, but we present things, we keep it local. So our audience is also local. That is, for, let's say, the LA Philharmonic, people will drive from Santa Monica or Pasadena or maybe even Orange County to go to hear the LA Philharmonic at Disney Hall, which is a wonderful experience. People don't come from distances to the Beach City Symphony. They tend to really be within the Beach City's area, the other way of putting it, the South Bay. So it is very local in that sense. Yes.
Right. No, that's very true, and it's wonderful, and it's amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are a regular listener to the South Bay Show, with Jackie Balestra and myself on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, please take this opportunity to forward this show about the Beach City Symphony to all of your friends, and please show up on Friday because there's going to be an amazing performance this coming Friday, the 27th of January, at Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College. Be sure to bring $3 $1 bills. That it makes parking very easy. The machine takes $3, but $3 $1 bills are very convenient to use, and so parking is $3, and it's an amazing experience. And if you get there at 7:30 p.m. on this coming Friday, you will hear a talk by Barry prior to the performance. So can you just tell us, Barry, the order of events? You do speak at 7:30, is that correct?
No, that's correct, yes, for approximately 20 minutes or so. And then we have to get ourselves organized. The orchestra has to come on stage and warm up before the concert, right? And then at 7:15, the chair of the board, Pat Chavez, will come out and make a couple of opening comments, and then we commence. And, of course, we always commence with the Star Spangled Banner. We don't talk about that because it's only a minute and a half long, and everybody's rather familiar with it. But we always do start each concert with the National Anthem.
National Anthem. And it's this coming Friday. Tell us about the program.
Right. Well, we have three pieces which follow the standard concert format. We start with an overture. Then we go to a concerto, then it's intermission, and then we have a symphony. That's, if you want, you could say it's a very tired formula, but it's very effective. right. So we're starting with a Mozart overture to an opera which has not done a whole lot, La Clemenza di Tito, which means the clemency of Titus. Titus was a Roman emperor in about the 3rd century A.D., and excuse me, the sort of interesting story here, the opera was written in the last year of Mozart's life, where the big two huge things he wrote that year are the opera The Magic Flute, which is very popular, and the Requiem, which he didn't quite finish. But in the middle of this, somewhere around July, he was asked to compose an opera seria. An opera seria is not a comedy and it's not a tragedy, but it's dealing with a serious thought or a serious subject. So he was, and this was for the inauguration of the Emperor Leopold, who was going to become the Emperor of Bohemia, in addition to being already the Emperor of Austria. So what happens on such occasions, an opera would be written that's about someone like a Roman emperor who is shown in a particularly good light. And this is basically a reflection of the emperor who's about to be inaugurated. So you write up a piece about somebody completely different, but it's very obvious you're really writing something nice about the new emperor here. It was just one of those things that people did because you had to, be nice to the incoming leader because he was going to be your leader and you didn't want to offend him. So you have to make him feel good whether he was a nice person or not. So that was kind the purpose of writing this, this particular
kind of like,
opera.
Kind of like so, we have to say nice things about Donald Trump right now, right?
I would rather sidestep that subject.
okay.
And this was written, but since he was not feeling... Oh, and the reason he took it on, although he was very busy, is that his fee was twice as great as his fee for writing an opera for just a theater or something. So he always needed money, so he went into that. He composed it, they claim, within 28 days. Of course, Mozart was rather brilliant and fast at this stuff. We also have to mention that in his period, and this is the late 18th century, musical pieces had a great amount of repetition. In other words, when you came to the recapitulation, you get the first thing over again. Well, that was exactly the same, so you didn't have to think. You just had to copy it out quickly. But he did this so fast that it's claimed that he did not write the recitatives himself. Now, in the operas of this period, you had the arias. Arias basically express feelings. You had ensembles, which express feelings, but also a little bit of not necessarily conflict, but drama between the characters. But the story was put forward by... let's say dialogue. That's where, the character say, I'm going to do this, we shouldn't do that, that guy's a bad guy, she's a nice lady, that kind of action. These were recitatives. That's basically sung dialogue. A harpsichord, precursor to the piano, would roll off a chord, and then these recitatives, which are not melodic, but they are sung, would be... and advanced the story. So it is claimed that his pupil Süssmayr, Franz Xaver Süssmayr, wrote these for Mozart because he didn't have the time to do it himself. Now Süssmayr was also the fellow who was definitely credited with having completed the Requiem that Mozart wrote after his death. Another little side thing on this overture, we're spending all this time talking about a 5-minute piece. Of course, that's the overture. The whole opera is a couple of hours long. That they originally had thought of giving the commission to Antonio Salieri, who is the head of Italian opera at the court in Vienna. But he was rather busy and chose not to do it. Now, Salieri is the same person you may remember from the play and the movie Amadeus, who was, and Mozart was his nemesis. You know, every time Salieri tried to do something, the young Mozart was so brilliant, he was just better at it, you know. So that concept for that movie may not exactly be accurate. I mean, they definitely knew each other, and Salieri was definitely older and unfortunately did have dementia. Back then, they put people in what was called an insane asylum. That did happen to him in his last years, and they definitely worked together or knew each other. But it's just one of those little sidelights we can always throw out these days.
Right. Well, this is wonderful, and it is a very short piece. As you say, it's about 5 minutes long.
Right.
I have 5 minutes long. Let's hear it, and I guess we
Excellent.
Can play it in its entirety.
Wonderful.
And it's Clemenza di Tito?
Right. Di Tito. It's an I. La Clemenza di Tito. Right. The clemency of Titus.
Okay. All right. This is Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and an overture.
Thank you.
that is so like Mozart. It just, I think many people would say if they heard it, is that Mozart? Because it's so,
well, it's late
so familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's the style is very familiar, but of course, like most composers, he evolved with time. Although he didn't live that long, only 35 years. So, but he it's not like the earlier music. It doesn't sound like eine kleine Nachtmusik or that kind of thing, because he's evolved and it's gotten more complex. And this overture is much more complex than things he wrote 10 years earlier. So it's definitely in his style. You can recognize it immediately, but it's a very interesting piece.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Right. But I have to tell
Wonderful.
You that the opera, La Clemenza di Tito, is not very popular. It doesn't. I mean, he has five big operas: The Marriage of Figaro, Don Giovanni, The Magic Flute, Così fan tutti, and what am I forgetting? I'm forgetting something. That was only four.
Oh,
he's got five big operas. Anyhow, this is not done very much. The style, as I mentioned, opera seria, never really grabbed people because of its nature, the way his other dramatic or comedic things did. Oh, yes, The Abduction from the Seraglio. That's the fifth one.
Mm.
Okay, I wouldn't have lived for the rest of the day if I hadn't come up with that.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. Wonderful. Great piece. We loved it. And you'll get to see it, ladies and gentlemen, in person this coming Friday. Wonderful. Wonderful. Now, of course, the next piece is a little bit bigger, longer, let's say. But the key is it's almost as if every school child knows the name of this composer. Of course, it was this composer was enshrined in, for all time in American culture in the Peanuts comic strip and then television programs because one of the characters, Schroeder, was obsessed with this composer. Tell us about this triple concerto.
Yes. Okay. This is a little bit different from standard concertos because there are three solo instruments. Your normal concerto is just has, let's say, one violinist or a clarinet player standing in front of the orchestra, or if it's a piano concerto, sitting in front of the orchestra, and it's the one solo instrument accompanied by the orchestra. This has three soloists: piano, violin, and cello. That's why it's called a triple concerto. There aren't many such. Our audience is probably familiar with the Bach double concerto for two violins. That gets played a great deal. And, of course, there's the Brahms double concerto for violin, cello, and orchestra. And Vivaldi has many concertos for multiple instruments, but they're not quite so popular. So the Beethoven triple concerto is for these three instruments with orchestra. One of the challenges we have is to figure out how to get them to sit on the stage because it's a different situation where they can all see the conductor and have communication with themselves. So, but that's a technical thing we will have to work out on Wednesday evening. So,
You mean you have not actually, you don't have a solution to this puzzle yet?
No, we will have to work it out because everybody is different dealing with the soloists, and the stage is not the same as playing it in somebody's living room where you can sit in any convenient arrangement. If you just had a piano trio with no orchestra, and there are many pieces by Beethoven and others for piano trio, you would have the violinist basically sitting in a line with the pianist. And then the cello player would sit within the curve of the keyboard looking towards the violinist and the pianist. But on a stage, you can't have the cellist sitting in the curve of the keyboard because they couldn't see the conductor, because the piano lid is raised. So that, you know, so we have to do it in some different way, and different people have different feelings about that. You know, so I just saw one famous group, historical group, on a DVD on YouTube. It had the wonderful Russian soloists Svyatoslav Richter on piano, Rostropovich on cello, and David Oistrakh on violin. And so Shostakovich, the cellist, was a little bit in back of the pianist, so they had no eye contact. And Oistrakh was standing, not sitting, also in back of the pianist, the violinist and the cellist could see each other, and all three of them could see the conductor. Mm. But they didn't have eye contact. The string players did not have eye contact with the pianist. On the other hand, it was a wonderful performance. So what can you say? So you have to come up with your own solution based on people's desires and the design of a given stage.
Right.
So
right.
Back to the piece. And so Beethoven wrote this thing in 1803, and it was published the next year. And it's claimed that Beethoven wrote it for his royal pupil, the Archduke Rudolf of Austria. Rudolf had studied piano with Beethoven, had become quite accomplished as a teenager. And so the thought is Beethoven was writing this with a somewhat showy piano part, but not really difficult. But when it came to the first performance, Rudolf did not play it. Beethoven did. It was played 4 years later. And when it was published, it bore a different dedication to a different patron of his, Prince Lobkowitz. Beethoven had, after he was mature, that is in his 30s or so, there were three patrons, Lobkowitz, Archduke Rudolf, and I believe the third one was Lichnowsky, and they had gotten together and decided they would each give him a certain amount of money a year. That way he wouldn't have to give lessons, and he would be taken care of, and that way he could just spend his time composing. And they did this until he died. I think one of them may have passed away before Beethoven did, but in that sense, Beethoven didn't have to worry about an income. Although he always was concerned about making sure he got paid for the music he composed for either publishers or musicians. You know, he was a decent businessman. As opposed to Mozart, by the way, when Mozart died, he was in a very bad fiscal situation because he didn't seem to know how to save money. He sort of squandered it too much. Beethoven was in very decent fiscal condition when he died. So just a difference in personalities.
Right.
And the piece is in the triple concerto. It's in the typical three movements that you get for concertos: a fast movement, a slow movement, and then another exciting fast movement at the end. One unique thing, and I don't have the solution or reason for this, is the orchestra starts the different movements, and then the soloists come in. But in each movement, it's the solo cellist who comes in first, not the whole group of three. And I don't know why that is, whether he had some special cellist he wanted to show off or particularly liked or whatnot. But I have not been able to solve the riddle to that one. Yeah.
And also, what are we listening for? You know, I have the whole piece, so I guess we're going to hear the first movement or part of the first movement.
Just part of it. It's too long.
Yes. What are we listening for? What do you in the first few minutes of the piece? What's most outstanding about it?
Well, after the orchestral introduction, then you get the cello soloist coming in, then you get the violin soloist, and then you get the pianist coming in. So they come in, they have different entrances, which of course you couldn't do if you only had one soloist. Now the thing that's completely different for this concerto, normally once the soloist is in, you get the soloist soloist with the orchestra accompaniment. But here you have the piano, which is can give a perfectly fine accompaniment without the orchestra. So you get a lot of the music here is just the three of them playing the violin with the cello accompanied by the piano with no orchestra going on, which makes the balances a little bit different than your normal violin or cello concerto.
I see.
Yeah.
On your website, I saw that it was Ludwig van Beethoven. That's V-A-N. Is that is it V-A-N or
V-O-N? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Because his grandfather was Dutch.
Hmm.
And von with an O-N is Germanic. And it also implies some level of nobility.
Hmm.
See, and Beethoven definitely had no was not noble. He was born to a more average kind of family in Bonn, Germany, but with van. Now, later on, as he got more mature, he was involved with some legal issues in court. We don't need all the details on that, but he tried to claim that his van was the same as a Vaughn. He didn't get away with it. But the reason he did that is you had a different set of courts for the nobility than you did for the lower class people.
Yeah.
And for what he was trying to do, if he was in the courts for the nobility, he had a better chance for doing what he wanted to do than if he was in the lower courts. tiered courts for the tiered population, something which is we can't even imagine today anymore. So life in early 19th century Central Europe was very different from what it is in the United States. Or, I mean, they don't have that system anymore anyhow, since nobility was abolished at the end of the First World War in 1918.
Right.
Which is only 100 years ago when you stop and think about it.
Well, yeah, and when you say abolished, you mean in terms of civil society.
Well, yes, but you no longer were called count or duke or anything. That all disappeared. You could keep the fawn in your name, but you no longer had these royal titles and all that. Yes, although within that group of people, they all knew who each other's were. Even when I was there 50 years ago in the 1960s, someone could tell you, oh, that's really Count von so-and-so. They still knew
it. I'm imagining it still continues, yes.
Today, I don't think so. Or it is only a few people pay attention to that. You know, that's long gone.
Yeah.
Because those families no longer necessarily have the wealth they had because of modern taxes and whatnot, you know. So, but I can't tell you what's going on today.
Yeah, fantastic. And this is again, you know, among the classic composers. You hear the first few bars of music, and you think, that kind of sounds like Mozart, or that kind of sounds like Beethoven. Well, this piece is one of those pieces that sounds very Beethoven-esque.
Yes, although it's not as popular as his other six concertos. He has five piano concertos and a violin concerto. Those get played all the time. This doesn't get played all the time, partly because you have to get three soloists together, you know. But it just hasn't quite, maybe that's the reason, but it hasn't quite achieved the popularity of the other Beethoven concertos.
Well, I look forward to hearing this piece. Let's play a bit of it. This is the Triple Concerto in C major, piano, violin, cello, and orchestra by Ludwig van Beethoven. Not von, van. Thank you very much, and here we go. I love this piece, Barry.
Oh yes, it's one. It was Beethoven, so it's wonderful. Yes,
it's wonderful, and
yes,
the interplay between the soloists is really very. I don't know that I've ever heard anything like this.
Right. Well, there are many piano trios, many by Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn, Brahms, Mendelssohn, whatnot, big 19th century stuff. So you, if that interests you, you could, you know, go into piano trios you know, pay attention to that.
Now, they're piano trios. That's the standard phrase that you
right. If you say
you
piano trio, that means piano, violin, and cello. Right.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember a specific piano trio that really grabbed me, but I really love this one.
Yes, no, it's a good piece.
It's a good piece, good piece. Right. Now, I told you that I had a question for you at the top of the show, and I want to make sure that I get this question in. There... You know, unquestionably, you know, I would say 10 out of 10 people that know classical music know Mozart and Beethoven, 10 out of 10. And
right.
And almost, I would say, 5 out of 10 of the general public would know those names. They may not know anything about it. They know those names. Sibelius. I think that would not be true of Jean Sibelius.
You're correct. However, you have to realize that's true of most composers. I mean, if you talk to the man in the street, who knows about Mahler? Who knows about Prokofiev? Who knows about Aaron Copland? You know, so Sibelius is considered one of the greats. No question about that. And while he was still alive in the first half of the 20th century, he was considered huge. He was a big name, music performed all the time. Actually, he still is performed all the time all over the world, not as much as the earlier people like Mozart and Beethoven, but he still performed all the time. And in the first half of the 20th century in England, he was big, huge. I mean, they were playing his music all the time. I don't know about today, but still he's considered one of the greats.
Now let me try. Aaron Copland, Fanfare for the Common Man.
Well, that's a little piece. That's only, 4 minutes long, yes. Right.
Okay.
But then he wrote Appalachian Spring and Rodeo and Billy the Kid, his famous ballets. Right.
Right.
Yeah, so Copland is a in the musical world of American music is very big also. But your man on the street isn't going to know that the way he's heard of Mozart and Beethoven. Of course, Mozart, right. He's heard of to a great extent, well, it's kind of old now, but from the movie Amadeus. And
right.
A lot of kids 20 years ago, if you said Beethoven, they thought of a dog. Because
right.
There were one or two movies and where they had this big, lovable dog, and the dog was given the name Beethoven, and they think Beethoven's a dog. Now, 20 years ago, the kids that watched that are, you know, they're 25 or 26. I hope they figured out the difference by now. But, you know, so you get these silly things that make the very famous people famous. I mean, you take Einstein. A lot of young people only know him because of that silly picture where he sticks his tongue out.
Right.
You know, right. And he has the wild hair, but they really, they're not exactly into relativity theory yet, you know. So it's one of those things. Famous people are famous, but not everybody knows exactly why, you know.
And I treasure the discussions that we've had, Barry, you and I, about space-time continuum and, you know, mass equations. And I just cherish the conversation.
Yes, space-time continuum. They were into Star Trek, you know, but that's all
yeah.
right. Yes. Right.
There is something, you know, unique about every composer that brings them to mind. What would you say, Jean Baelius? Tell us a little bit about their lives.
Well, Sibelius was Finnish, and no other composer from Finland, of which there have been some, achieved what he did. Now, for us in the modern world or the contemporary world, the person who was the music director of the L.A. Philharmonic, Esa-Pekka Salonen, is a quite well-known composer in a modern style, shall we say, whatever that means. And his music does get performed quite a bit, actually. But nobody has achieved what Sibelius did. I mean, even Grieg from Norway didn't quite make it as big as Sibelius did. He's mainly known for his piano concerto, whereas Sibelius has his seven symphonies and his violin concerto. Those are the biggest things. And then a number of other things. So he was from that part of the world, you know, the rather cold northern thing. And by the time he wrote his Third Symphony, which was in 1904, he was very well established as Finland's great composer. And at some point, I can't tell you what year, the country of Finland just gave him an annual stipend so he wouldn't have to teach, and he could just live and compose.
Wow.
At some point around this 1904, he got tired of life in Helsinki, and he moved to a little an estate outside of the city, which he called Ainola, because his wife's name was Aino, so he called his estate Ainola, and that's where he lived for the rest of his life. Of course, he did a certain amount of traveling. And as it happens, with at least back then, with many people from that part of the world, around the age of 50 or so, he stopped composing. You know, it's that northern thing of living in the dark all the time, which has sent many of them into, you know, drinking too much in an alcoholic sense. He had that problem, too. I don't think that's quite the same today, because we have artificial lighting, which makes things a little bit lighter. And, of course, in the wintertime, when it's so dark, somebody can fly to a warmer part of the world, fly to Israel or, you know, the French Mediterranean, you know, areas, and you can get away from it. But back then, when there wasn't so much traveling, people from that part of the world lived in darkness a great deal of the time. And you can hear that in his music. It has sort of a dark aspect to it. Now, the Third Symphony is rather interesting, because his first two symphonies and his famous tone poem, Finlandia, this is all in a very romantic style, which is appropriate for the end of the 19th century. But when he moved to this Einola, he sort of went back in spirit to the Haydn and Beethoven, and he has a very clear classical structure to the pieces. It's a smaller work than the Second Symphony, and it's very tightly composed. And the opening of the first movement is not, I don't want to say simple, but it's very no sharps and flats. You just have white notes on, if you're thinking of the piano, in C major. And this goes on for quite a while. And so he's coming back to an older classical style, and he was very successful with it. It's a lovely symphony. His second symphony is the most popular of them all. After that, perhaps the fifth. This is one of my favorites because it's so nicely and tightly put together, and it's also a very happy thing. You don't always get happy music from Nordic composers. They tend to be quite serious. But this one... has a very happy ending to it, and the whole thing is very light in character. So, so it has its great strong points.
Well, let's get to this piece. We have just a few minutes left. We want a few minutes to enjoy Symphony Number 3 in C major by Jean Sibelius of Finnish descent. Here we go. Barry.
Yes.
That's a very nice piece. Thank you.
Oh, yes, yeah, definitely. Yes.
As very wonderful.
Right. Yeah, we did it once before about 18 years ago or so. Yeah.
And really? So you haven't done it since then?
Correct.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'm thrilled to – I don't think we knew each other 18 years ago.
Oh, definitely not. No. Yeah.
But I have known you for a few years, and I'm really excited about this coming Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, you're invited to the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra this coming Friday, January 27th, at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College. If you would, please bring three $1 bills. That makes it easy to pay for parking. Otherwise,
but we need to stress that the admission to the concert is free.
Yes, 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 of course. The admission to the concert is free. And so you can bring the whole family. Yes, all 10 cousins. You can bring them. That's just fine. And it's a wonderful event. It's great for kids that can appreciate music. Obviously, it's not perfect for babies or toddlers, but for young children, it's really an amazing experience. They see musicians playing live quality music, and it's I would imagine for a child that's never seen it, it's a magical experience. So I highly recommend it. My wife and I love it, and we intend to be there. And I also would like to mention our sponsor, Direct Sellers. I hope I can arrange it, Barry, that my sponsor can actually sponsor the event and maybe even have a table and pour wine. Do you guys have wine or alcohol?
We can't, because it's a public school.
There can't be
any alcoholic beverages there.
Okay, all right. Well, that makes sense. But we will maybe we can just pass out cards that talk about the wine club, and people can experience it in the privacy of their own homes. But again, our sponsor, Direct Sellers. You can find out more online at joeterrywine.com. That's J-O-E. T as in terrific, ERRYWINE.com, joeterrywine.com. Thank you for joining us today. This is an amazing thing to have here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, the Beach City Symphony Orchestra. It's so close, and it's what an amenity to have here in our community. Thank you so much, Barry Brisk, for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure being with you, Joe.
We look forward to I look forward to seeing you on Friday, and of course concerts. Let's just talk briefly about the concerts coming up this season. This is the opening concert of this season. Can we talk briefly about the upcoming concerts?
Yes. Well, I must correct you. This is the opening concert of 2017. Concert seasons go basically from September to May. So we had a concert last November.
Right.
Right, but we do have a concert coming up on we have a concert coming up on March 24th, our next one after this week, which will feature music by Stravinsky, Ravel, and Max Bruch. And then in May, we have a concert which will feature four young soloists under the ages of 18, and then we open it up with an orchestra piece, and we close it with an orchestra piece. But that's always particularly interesting because you get to hear these very talented young people playing, some of them for the first time playing with an orchestra. So that's always a fun thing. And that then rounds out our season. After the May concert, we stop for the summer, and we start rehearsing again, basically when school starts in September.
I see.
Right.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. Looking forward to it, and especially looking forward to the Bruch peace. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Max Bruch.
Right.
That piece with a violin soloist, Roberto Cani. Have you had him as a soloist
Roberto
before?
Cani, right.
Cani. Have you
Cani,
had him
yes.
as a soloist?
Yeah, he's the soloist. He lives in Southern California. I mean, he was born in Italy, but he is now the concertmaster of the Los Angeles Opera Orchestra, which is very prestigious. He's a marvelous violinist. He's played with us twice before.
Mm.
So, yeah, so we're really looking forward to this.
Right, the Scottish Fantasy. That's
right.
That's a piece I can remember it somewhat, but I just remember it as being spectacular.
Oh, well, it is. It's, you know, got quite an impressive violin part, and it's based on Scottish folk songs, which is why it has that name. Even though the composer Bruch was, I think, Hungarian, but he's from the Germanic Central European world, you know.
Yeah.
But he wrote a few things that were based on folk songs from different countries.
Right, right. And then the Firebird Suite, March 24th, coming up.
Right.
The Firebird Suite by Igor Stravinsky. Wow.
Right. Well, that was his. You know, he wrote a big ballet. That was his first huge work I think it was 1909. But being a ballet, that's a huge thing, and he had an enormous orchestra. So 10 years later, in 1919, he made excerpts from it and turned that into a suite, and with a slightly reduced orchestra size, so that normal orchestras could play it. It's a very popular piece. It will be closing our concert with that work.
Wonderful, wonderful. Barry, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you on Friday.
I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome, awesome. All right, everyone, that's your mission. Get to the Marseille Auditorium at 7:30 if you want to hear, or 7:15 if you want to hear the chairman of the board, Pat Chavez, speak, and maybe get a raffle ticket. Everything starts at 7:15, so be there or be square. Thank you so much, Barry, and we'll see you all this coming Friday for good music in the South Bay. Bye-bye, Barry.
Bye-bye.